You're listening to the Million Dollar Sellers Podcast with your host, Nick Chouquette. Today's show features another amazing entrepreneur who has found success online. Now, let's learn what it takes to be a Million Dollar Seller.
Welcome to the Million Dollar Sellers Podcast. Today we have John Klein on the show. Thanks for coming on, John. It's always great to chat with you, man. And I'm excited for the group and the listeners to get to know you a little bit better. I know you've done some really cool stuff during your journey on Amazon. You've taken four brands from zero to seven figures, which is amazing. And I know you just have a different way of thinking, which impacts me a lot and how I operate. And I'm excited to share that with the community. But go ahead and just let everyone know, a little bit about you, your background, what life is like for you at home, and what you got going on these days for work.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, thanks, Nick, for having me on. First and foremost, I'm super stoked to be here. I've been a long-time listener of the show. You do an amazing job, so thank you for
thanks, man, that
you do for us to deliver us awesome content and awesome stories from sellers and stuff. So, yeah, a little bit about myself. Born and raised in Long Island, New York. Lived there my whole life about 5 years ago. Moved down to Charlotte, North Carolina. Married to an amazing wife for, we're going on around 12 years now. I've got to make sure I got that right. And I've got two amazing kids, a 12-year-old boy and an 8-year-old girl. Our boys have had a chance to connect and become friends, which is really cool. So I have been involved in digital marketing for around 12 years. I started actually working for a friend doing like affiliate marketing, landing page design, conversion rate optimization, stuff like that. That was my entry point to the business. And then had the opportunity in around 2015 to launch our own skincare brand. And I can get a little more into like the ups and downs of that whole journey, but because we did not hit it right out of the gate, had a lot of struggles, trials and tribulations making the business successful. But we finally did shortly after launching on Amazon. And these days, I am still running the skincare brand. I run a growth and consulting agency, helping Amazon-focused brands. And I also more recently have launched a pet brand and launching a home decor brand.
Awesome, man. And what do you think, what is it about you that has allowed you to accomplish these things, right? Like, in my opinion, a lot of this kind of stems from, the person that we were back in the day, the experiences that we've been through. And then we shape that and turn it into, an asset these days that really allows us to specialize in something. What was life like for little John back in the day? And how do you draw on those experiences to best represent yourself today?
That's a really good question. I think for a lot of people in MDS, they've kind of had this entrepreneurial mindset from a very young age. I think I had it, but hadn't really started any significant businesses until after college. But I knew that I always wanted to work for myself, and I didn't want to work for somebody else. I think the biggest thing that allowed me to find success was just like pressure over time. It's like a very silly saying, but it's so simple, but it's so true. It's like, you can't build the diamond like overnight. You've got to just kind of apply pressure slowly but surely over time. So I think just like what the common thread that makes us all successful is the ability to show up day after day, get knocked down, get back up, show up again, and just keep taking consistent action. I think, in certain ways, I took a long time to develop into the entrepreneur I am today, but it wouldn't have happened without that. Just kind of like showing up and doing more each day,
Right. Right. Was there anyone who inspired you back in the day that allowed you to just keep showing up? Because I think that's right. Like, a lot of people, we kind of have similar experiences, but I think that's what sets us apart is we keep showing up. Like back in the day, I kind of thought like, what was wrong with me? Like, why do I keep doing this, right? Like, why am I not giving up?
Right.
But you're right. Like, that's what makes a good entrepreneur. We have a vision and we're just stuck on it and we're chasing it. And I think a lot of us draw on inspiration from other people for that.
Yes, that's a very good question. So I think that I was fortunate to have some good examples. You know, my father had his own business. He was a dentist, and that's actually part of my origin story, was working in his business and helping to grow it. Both of my uncles were entrepreneurs. So I saw all these examples of like entrepreneurs around me. So I think that that's such a key piece, right? It's, you need to really feel like it's possible from seeing people directly around you having success. I think it's very difficult for someone to see something on YouTube or something on Instagram or whatever it may be and have no real world examples of it in their lives and believe that it's like really possible, you know? So I think that's a lot of the, you know, the privilege is just kind of seeing, you know, real examples of entrepreneurs. And then I was just fortunate to have some good mentors in digital marketing early on who kind of showed me what was possible. And maybe it was also some of like, you know, I worked in the bank. I worked for Chase and Wachovia, and I was tired of that. And I just really didn't want to, you know, work for somebody else anymore. So just that feeling of desire for freedom, right? You know, I'm not necessarily looking to become a billionaire doing this stuff, but as long as I have freedom and I could kind of, you know, have a business that supports my lifestyle, like that to me is worth fighting for. So it's something that's always given me a lot of inspiration and motivation to keep going each day, you know?
Awesome, man. Wachovia, I haven't heard that name in a while. that old bank. Yeah.
Right around when they were like messing up everybody's mortgages and like they were paying out big commissions and yeah, it was funny to see it from the inside because, you know, as we all know, just a few years later, we had the financial crisis and it was all because of us. So,
yeah, that reminds me, man, this moment's so vivid in my mind. My dad and I were riding around my grandmother in the car. She must have been like 97 or something, you know, kind of losing it. And she always read everything she saw as we drove along. And she saw Wachovia and out of nowhere, she just said, they better watch over your money. And it's just so funny, man. Like, well, yeah. They just, older people and little kids, you know, they just say like things out of nowhere that make you laugh.
No, I think Wachovia missed out on an awesome catchphrase with that. So
yeah.
We should hire grandma.
100%, man. Is there any moment in your life you reflect on that's vivid for you that like, you know, I'm going to do this entrepreneur thing. Like, this is it. This is for me. The other way is not. And I'm going to go after it.
Yeah, I would say that it was that Wachovia experience, just getting towards the end. They were merging with Wells Fargo and it was just, you know, it just became apparent to me that I was never going to like get ahead and I was never going to grow in the company to like a high role. There was like a lot of nepotism and a lot of just messed up stuff going on. So I was like, you know, I got to take a shot at this thing. And then, you know, I think for the first 5 years when I was an unsuccessful entrepreneur, trying a lot of things and failing at a lot of things, I wasn't so sure. But then, you know, when you start to get like a little bit of traction, then the light bulb kind of like goes on and you're like, okay, wow, like this can actually happen for me. And then like, I think it's like my first online sale, right? As soon as I saw like the cash register like ringing, I was hooked and I was obsessed, you know? So
nice.
I think that was the point where like there was no looking back for me. But I definitely had some trials and tribulations early on where I wasn't so sure if I could do it, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's what happens to all of us, right? And I think it's important for anyone thinking about that they understand it's going to be tough, but that there is, you know, that the grass is greener on the other side in this scenario, right? Like we always hear people say it's not, using that phrase, but it really is. And you've got to be willing to go through those tough times and see them as, you know, lessons and learning opportunities, not failures, right? Because as soon as we labeled it as a failure, now we've turned it into this negative thing, and we've made it harder for ourselves, right? What were some of those things as you got started with your journey that you struggled with, and how did you view those and overcome them?
Yeah, so good question. So I'll talk a little bit about the history of our skincare brand. So the way it started, my father is a dental practice. When I left Wachovia, I joined up with him as the marketing director to help kind of grow the business and work on some other entrepreneurial projects that all failed at the time. So we met a world-renowned chemist who was working with a particular type of technology. He was a VP of R&D at several public companies during the 80s. And we were looking to put the technology into an oral rinse. We basically started down that path and ended up pivoting into skincare because there were some issues with some of the ingredients not being generally recognized as safe, GRAS. So there were FDA, FTC issues, and skincare was an easier path for us. We actually wrote a couple patents on the technology as it relates to skincare, and created the initial product, which is a 3-step acne treatment kit. Our initial play was like we felt like we were a platform technology, and we felt like we were like a science company because our technology actually works on a wide range of skin conditions. So not only will it work on acne, but it'll work on anything that's, you know, bacterial or fungal related. So after we developed it, I was spending a lot of time trying to figure out how to out-license some aspects of the technology. I was trying to figure out how to sell to dermatologists and estheticians on a private label basis. And I was trying to figure out how to partner with a really big direct-to-consumer, like we were looking at DRTV type of partners. And I actually went pretty far in negotiations with a couple of them, but they all fell apart. So like I had basically plan A, plan B, plan C, like all slowly failed over a few years. And like plan D was to launch my own brand because the, you know, rewind like 5 years prior to 2015 when we launched, which was like 2010, it wasn't so easy to like launch a brand, right? I mean, aside from Amazon, which we didn't really know about, it could require some pretty big financial investment. So I just didn't really see how we could do that. I felt like that was going to be the hardest of all the options. But lo and behold, we made our way to Plan D and, you know, created our own brand and brought it to Amazon. And like immediately when we brought it to Amazon, we did $500,000 in sales just with one product in the first year.
Wow.
And a million.
And what year was that?
Yeah, that was in 2015.
2015.
Yeah.
Nice, man. What was the market like on Amazon at that moment? Would you feel like it's gotten a lot more competitive with your specific technology? Like, have other people adopted it?
No. We're still the only ones that have it. Yeah, we're still the only ones that have the technology. When we came in during the first few years between 2015 and 2018, we figured some stuff out that the big brands hadn't really figured out yet, like how to get reviews, how to use pay-per-click to drive organic rankings. And I think a lot of the bigger brands in the space were looking at pay-per-click and they were like, like that's not acquiring a customer in the traditional sense that we're used to. You're like acquiring a customer for Amazon. So why are we going to do like pay-per-click? And like, I think they just didn't know how to get reviews and stuff like that. I guess around 2020, if I'm not mistaken, is when Amazon really democratized the reviews with like the request review button. The big brands kind of like caught up to us. So we ended up having to release a bunch more products just to like maintain the same level of revenue that we're at right now. But it got a lot more competitive once the big brands in our space caught up. So that's part of the reason why I diversified into some of the other business models, the brand management, consulting and also some new brands that are in niches that are a little less competitive.
Okay. So I'll ask this question. I feel like I know the answer because I've drive down and see you. We kick it all the time and hang out. But like, what are you best at? Like, what is your area of expertise that you focus on in the business?
Yeah, so I love growth and marketing. I'm a berry squeezer, you know. So that's what that was the analogy that we talked about, right? So it's funny, like I've spent my whole career trying to figure out how to squeeze all the juice out of a berry, right? What are all the different traffic channels you can do, all the different hacks and tactics and things you could do to get the most out of a given product, right? And so that's where most of my knowledge comes from. More recently, I've learned that, hey, maybe it's not about squeezing all the juice out of the berries you have. Maybe it's about picking some more berries. Right. And, you know, squeezing as much juice out of them as possible, but, you know, still just focus on more berries, which is more products, right?
Yeah.
So it's been a little shift in focus for me over the past year. But that's kind of my background, and what I enjoy is just chatting about growth and marketing.
Nice. Yeah, I love the berry analogy. Was really hit home for me when you said it. Because we were talking about one of my brands and what I was doing, right? And we're pretty similar, right? Like we like to do the growth and the marketing stuff. And you said something along the lines of like, Nick, you need more berries, man. You need more berries to squeeze, right? I was doing all this cool marketing stuff, but you know, we only had one product, right? So we didn't really have anything else to sell the customers to increase the value of what we were doing. And yeah, that's not the only time you've said things that have really immediately shifted the way I think of something. I'm reminded of the experience on one of the affiliate platforms, right? Where everyone's trying to pay less. Everyone wants a deal. And you're just like, I'm paying them more. And at first I was like, what the hell? But then you explained it. And it's like, it makes sense, man. Like why, if you have a list of 1,000 people and you know, 80% of them are paying you less than 20%. Well, when things get rough or you have to prioritize something, who do you think they're going to prioritize? And sure, of course, it's going to be those, you know, those people that are paying a premium for the service. I just like, it just shifted the way I think, but it's common sense. Like, what led you to kind of develop? Was that something that you just, like you just made sense to you right away, or was that a lesson you learned?
Yeah, it was a lesson I learned. I went to the affiliate summit about 5 years ago, and also my previous experience with affiliates and just chatting with a bunch of them. And they, you know, explained to me very clearly. It's like they have, you know, 20 slots on a calendar, right? You've got, you know, 5 days in the work week, 4 weeks in the month. And they view that calendar as their inventory, right? So, you know, whatever they do, if they're, you know, an email affiliate or they're creating content or whatever they're doing, they have a limited amount of bandwidth and inventory. So if you want to like get on the top of their pile, like, yeah, you need to do that with incentivizing them appropriately. Of course, the conversion rate is another big factor in that. And then brand and relationship as well. But yeah, I think just, you know, more generally, it's thinking like empathetically, right? Like I think a lot of business owners are inherently like very selfish. And there's a fine, you know, line to walk there, right? Like if you're too empathetic, you're just like giving away the farm all the time. And I probably have a tendency to do that. But like, I feel like empathy is such an important trait for entrepreneurs because like, you know, your team members, your partners, like everybody who you work with, if you can really put yourself in their shoes, it's like a superpower, right? It's like, you know, people will, you know, stick to you and you know, your relationships will be longer and you know, employees staying with you longer and all those wonderful things. And yeah, I think it requires like empathy to do that.
Right. Yeah, I definitely agree with that, man. I think it's even more important in today's world, right? Where like you can't hide anything really, right? Like you can be blasted on social media in a second, right? Everyone knows who you are. Everyone can find information. You can't really hide behind anything these days, right? So like it just, that's more motivation to really be that empathetic person, which I think is great, right? Like it motivates everyone to be a better version of themselves. We're all human, right? We all have selfish desires. We all have things we want to accomplish. And I think knowing that it's harder to hide that side of ourselves, not that it's bad, right? Like it's just natural human behavior to want to take care of ourselves and our loved ones and stuff. But it really motivates us to think of the world as a community. And when you do that, you see people giving that love back to you in a variety of ways. And I think that's like what we see in the community, right? In the MDS community, the more you share, the more you get back.
Right.
And maybe you can, you know, I'll let you speak on kind of what the community means to you and how you navigate that here in a minute. But first, I wanna understand something else that you've shared with me is like your idea of kind of mastering the fundamentals before you go on to other things, you know, kind of, you know, making sure you have enough berries before you start squeezing all your berries, right?
Yeah.
What are some other things that you really make sure you get right along the way so that when you go hard on growth and marketing, you feel confident in what you're doing?
Yeah. So really good question. I think to start off the answer, you know, one of the big growth levers that a lot of people pull is obviously D2C, right? Getting off Amazon, Shopify, whatever platform you're going to use, but building a direct channel, right? So I spent a lot of time and energy trying to do this for my acne treatment brand around, let's say, 2020 and 2021. And, you know, we pulled every lever. Like we worked relentlessly on our email flows, you know, post-purchase, pre-purchase, cart abandonment, browse abandonment, retargeting ads, all these different things that impact the lifetime value, right? If you do these things correctly. And what we found was, even though we did a pretty good job of those things and a pretty good job of our acquisition efforts, testing various creatives and channels and all these different things, our lifetime value was not high enough relative to our competitors. One of the big things they say in digital marketing in general is like, he who could pay the most to acquire a customer wins, right? So if you're in a niche where you're against like behemoths that have these really big catalogs and really huge lifetime values, like they can afford to drive up the price of acquisition, right? So if you're a little guy in the same niche of big guys and you're all competing in the same area, it's going to be really hard for you to grow your direct to consumer past like a certain point, you know? And mm-hmm. So what we decided to do was kind of, you know, take a step back and focus on just like more berries, right? With the plan of coming back in a couple of years and trying again, because once you have more berries, you know, you can cross sell, you can upsell. And I think it's at the end of the day, the most predictable way to grow your lifetime value is not with the email flows, not with the remarketing, but it's with the berry quantity, right?
Right, right.
Of course, of related products, right? I don't necessarily mean a superstore of like all sorts of stuff. I mean products that the same customer can buy, right? So that way you're you know driving up that AOV lifetime value. So yeah, I think that that's such an important fundamental, and I'm using that for my new businesses too. So the new niches that I'm going into, part of me wants to do like everything at once and like, you know, hit D2C, whatever. And I'm like, no, let me just grow the product catalog, like focus on that for the first couple years, just on Amazon. And then when we have, you know, a decent catalog, then go into these things. So that's kind of what we've done, focus totally on product development and having more berries.
Yeah, It's interesting how as like we get more advanced in our line of work, we start to do less, but we start to do it better, right?
Yeah.
In the beginning, it's like, oh man, I could do anything, right? Like I would figure it out. I had all this energy, but I also only had one kid instead of four, right? And like at one point I was single, you know, so like I had nothing else to worry about and I could just, you know, stay on the computer in my pajamas all day and list products on Amazon and, you know, answer customer messages and stuff like that. But as we mature in life in a variety of ways, I think it's real important to change the way that we're thinking as we, you know, have all these clashing priorities happening in our life. And I know, you know, you've got two kids, you've got a wife, you got a house to take care of, you know, you got to take care of yourself. How are you navigating those situations in life right now?
Yeah, so I think to some extent, you know, the old adage is true. Like when you, you know, have kids and you're active in their lives, you're playing the entrepreneurship game on hard mode. You know, I think that's definitely true. You know, but I embrace that. You know, for me, I like what I do. I have no problem doing this for a long time, and so I try to work at a pace where, you know, like you said, I'm really effective, focusing on the most important things that are going to move the needles. But as I mature in the business, you know, doing more delegating, doing less of the, you know, action myself, being okay with somebody else working at 80% of my capacity, and just really trying to have that balance. You know, we've spoke about this extensively, like our time with our kids, like you're not getting that time back, man, you know?
Right.
So like I soak it all up. I'm, you know, I think we're all very fortunate to have something where we can have that time. And so I spend a huge amount of time with my kids, and also, you know, on myself, making sure that I'm, you know, getting my exercise, you know, getting out and in nature, getting some sun each day, the important things, you know, because life is too short. And, you know, I had the experience of, you know, my father was working like 80 hours a week as a dentist. And like, I didn't want to be like that, you know, and that's kind of what drove me to come into the business side instead of, you know, becoming a dentist myself. So,
yeah. Nice, man. Yeah. What kind of things have worked really well for you to allow you to do that? Like, when it comes to delegating or hiring or like a leveraging a third party, to handle some aspect of the business, is there any advice you would give anyone listening now that would want to, you know, delegate some work off their plate?
Yeah. So I don't think I'm super great at hiring and managing. So take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. But one thing that I think we do well that I like is we use Upwork a lot. So I like to find if, you know, I have a particular project, I might find somebody from Upwork. And then if we work really well together and there's like a more full-time need later, I can, you know, turn them into a full hire. You know, the other thing that I do is I spend a good amount of time, you know, training my people. I think that they, you know, part of what I promise to them is not just a paycheck. And, you know, I want them to really like advance in their careers and advance in their knowledge in the business. So I'll spend one-on-one time training my key people. As much as they want on any topic they want. And that's definitely a, investment of my time, that I'm happy to make to be able to better delegate and be able to, you know, have people stick with me, for longer. So yeah, those are a couple of things, I guess, off the top of my head that we do. And like I said before, I think the biggest tip that I got, that has worked for me is being okay with somebody else doing 80% as good of a job as you, you know? So
yeah,
the old John of 3 years ago, if there was a, like a landing page I had to make or something, like I'm going to sit up all night and geek on it and just make it like perfect and, you know, watch Ezra Firestone courses and just like nail the whole thing. But the new John today will let, like, you know, somebody else work on it and then, you know, bring it to me, and then, you know, I'll make it better, and just kind of like a collaborative approach or whatever.
And how's that been how's that worked for you? Like, how, like, what have you noticed once you made that change?
Yeah. You know, so I think it works really well. You know, about 18 months ago, tried to hire a brand manager for our skincare business, and I tried to really like step away. That's the only hire that I've ever had that didn't work out. And so what I did around 9 months ago is had to let go of that brand manager, and now the core team is just myself, my partner, and our Filipino VAs, and some other, you know, services gluing it all in between. And just the being a little more involved, like once a week for, you know, to do work sessions together, being very available on Slack and stuff. The team that we have now is actually like working better than ever. So it was like, I was really scared that I was, you know, taking a huge step back by losing the brand manager. It feels like we're working better than ever, with the current team and the current structure.
Nice. Nice. Are there any like roles you would recommend an Amazon seller look at delegating, first, you know, if they were thinking about doing this, maybe they're in like the 1 to 5 million range?
Yeah, I customer service is definitely the first thing that you should delegate. I think operations for me is something like I absolutely hate. Right, I like setting up systems, thinking about them, and letting other people run with them. So right. I think like the after customer service, it should be things that you're not great at, right? So operations is one of those things, you know, graphic design, stuff like that. That's really hard to do on your own. I think that the things that are directly related to growth and revenue should be like, you should keep it to yourself at the beginning. But then, as you grow, just kind of continue to outsource those things.
Yeah. Are there any third-party services you want to give a shout out to that have helped you, you know, delegate work that you're just not able to do yourself?
Yeah, I love No Limit Creative. Like I've told you a bunch of times, they do all sorts of stuff for us. They do branding work for us. They do product design work for custom products. They'll do, you know, website landing page design. They do ads. They'll do your Amazon images, A+ premium, kind of like whatever we've thrown at them, they've managed to do. They're not totally perfect. Sometimes you'll get like a new designer, but if you just keep requesting your favorite designers, you end up with some really good people and you build that like familiarity. And you get a lot for your money with them. You know, I split a subscription with a friend of mine. We get the unlimited images and unlimited video for like $800 a month, and you get 4 active projects at all times. So we really work and we really get our money's worth with them. So
nice.
I've enjoyed working with them. Yeah. Now it's to the point where I have some projects that I will manage myself in there, but most of the time I'm giving it to a VA and I'm just kind of helping them out in Slack, and they're managing the whole thing with No Limit Creative.
Very cool. Yeah, we actually we're gonna sign up with them as well and check them out now that we have a, you know, creative branding person on board that can really just take the lead on that stuff and make it all happen.
That's nice.
Yeah. Well, what kind of stuff have they done really well for you? Like, I know you shared some Amazon images with me that they did, and how much of it has to do with you? Right. Like, I think a lot of people will use these services and they think it's just going to be like a magic bullet. Right. And and then it's not, and they blame the service.
Yes. Yes. Perfect question. So, I'm my own creative director. I don't have somebody else doing that. I think it's totally the clarity of the directions you give them, but also the inputs. Right. So if you want to make like a branded video and you don't have any like custom content, right, that you shot, Like, what are they going to do? They're going to get like a bunch of stock images, a bunch of stock videos, and your video is going to look like kind of cheap, you know?
Yeah.
So I like to make the analogy. It's like a soup, you know? I mean, if you don't have like really good ingredients in your soup, it doesn't matter like who's mixing it up. It's going to be like a crappy soup, you know? So, yeah, I think those two elements are really key, is having like good inputs for them and good direction, like really super clear.
Okay. Man, you're like a whiz at the analogies, right? Like, it just the way that you bring them, right? Like, it's like everyone makes soup, right? Like, that's like a worldwide analogy, right? Like, if you can understand the word soup, you can get what John's saying here. And I think you do that very well. Like, I definitely think that's, I know you do that well compared to other people, right? Like, you're able to really connect the dots on a lot of things.
Yep. Yeah, thanks, man. I love the analogies.
Yeah. And man, that kind of like makes me think a little bit about like comparing, like sometimes I look back on myself, like back in the day, right? And like how I would look at myself now and what I've done and what I've accomplished. What's that like for you? Like, what would 15-year-old John say to, you know, John right now?
I think he'd be pretty happy, you know? Yeah, I think this is pretty darn cool what we're all doing now, you know? And I don't think, you know, I think 15-year-old John had a incorrect sense of how easy it would be to be an entrepreneur one day. And just like, hey, your uncle's doing it. You know, these guys are idiots. You could do it too. But I didn't know like what, you know, and like, hey, selling like physical products, like this is so cool. Like being a product guy, you know? So I think 15-year-old John would be super proud. And the other thing, you know, I think 15-year-old John would be proud of is just like, continuing to like put myself out there. You know, you do an amazing job of that too. It's like I have this like internal dialogue sometimes. It's like, don't do it, don't do it. And whenever I have that dialogue, I just do it, right? Like even if it's something that I like don't really want to do, just like just do it, you know? So I think that's like the biggest thing that 15-year-old John will be proud of the almost 40-year-old John that I am today.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. The thing that you mentioned there as well, it's almost like identifying a trigger for when you're like about to trip yourself up or something, right? And you kind of just, because I'll do it too. I have these things, I'll start to think about stuff and then I just shut it off and do it, right? It's kind of like the, you hear, you know, it's be scared, but do it anyways or something, right? Like that, right? Like, and I think children deal with that as well, right? Because they're told, they can get this idea in their head like, oh, you don't want to be scared. Don't be scared. You need to be brave. And they think being brave means not being scared, but really it means being scared and doing it anyways.
Yes. Right? Yes. Totally. Totally. And a lot of it is just like, you know, growing up to not really care what people think about you. You know, I think like young people are very naturally concerned with like, what will other people think of me? And yeah, letting go of that is just like one of the most freeing things that anybody could ever do, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I know I struggled with that significantly, like when I was younger. I mean, just trying to please everyone, you know, not really knowing how to please myself. And you just end up getting yourselves in these positions where you get screwed over, you know, over and over again. And it wasn't until I really figured out who I wanted to be and how I was going to get there and the people I needed to surround myself with in order to have that support that I was able, you know, to tell some people to, you know, get out of here. I don't care what you think, right? Like, and then it's funny because you go through that phase where people think, you know, now you're an asshole, right? Like now Nick is just mean and doesn't care about anyone. But it's, you know, it's just like, no, I'm not here to serve your needs or, you know, your idea of who I should be, right? Like I'm here to just be me and be myself and be comfortable. I think it's like marketing, right? Like, and for me, marketing, I'm big on qualifying, right? And the first thing I do is think about who the hell I don't want to market to, right? Like I need to know who I'm not talking to in order to really talk to the right person. And I think that it's like the same thing in life, right? It's understanding who's going to add value in your life and then adding value back to them.
Yep.
And I think that's what we see in MDS a lot, right? And what makes it so special is you have all these like-minded and driven people just adding value significantly. What does MDS mean to you, right? Like, why don't you talk a little bit about your journey into MDS, when you got in there, what it was like coming in, and what you do now? I know you head up the chapter down in North Carolina, so you're very involved with all that stuff.
No, totally. Coming in was, you know, I knew that I was like under-networked. I was really lucky to meet Brandon and Hassan back in New York. They kind of pushed me in, and I'm like, yeah, I really need a network. I need the answers to my questions. Like, I need the right answers to my questions now, right? And that, you know, just on paper is like insanely, infinitely valuable, right? So that's true, and that happened. But what was unexpected was like, yeah, you really do, like, it becomes your community. And you know, at the beginning, I definitely felt like an outsider. I think everybody, right, when they first join, they're like, you know, there must be cliques in here. There must be like, you know, these people know each other for a long time, and I'm just kind of like coming in. So I definitely felt that way, especially because I joined around COVID, so I didn't have a chance to get to an in-person event for a while. Once I got to my first in-person event, that's like when it really changed. I'm like, oh crap.
Yeah.
Like, these people are like my friends now.
Was it Puerto Vallarta?
Yes. That was my first event. Yep. Yep. Was Puerto Vallarta. So yeah, it was just a game changer to really like meet people I consider like friends, like lifelong friends, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, just feeling like I belong, you know? Then it's like obviously super inspiring that like my friends are achieving these like great things. So that adds more fuel to like the this is possible type of fire, you know?
Yes.
So it's just immeasurable. And it just makes me feel like I have like a team and a culture, you know? Part of like remote work being like really hard is like you're far away, you know? But the fact that we all get together, you know, we're doing the chapter stuff with like the holiday party and stuff, like it really means a lot to me that we have all that, you know? So
yeah,
I just can't, it's hard to put into words like all the different layers of what it's meant for me, but it's just been like, it's been everything.
Right on, man. Yeah. It's been great. I know that's how we met, right? I think the first time we met was at that event in Puerto Vallarta. My wife and I were down there, And we instantly connected, and then I don't even really know. I mean, it kind of feels like we've always been friends, right? Like, I don't know how it unfolded after that, but, you know, now I've been down to your house a few times. Not that long ago, you know, me and my wife and all the four kids were down there, you know, at your house for the weekend, and, you know, everything was great. You know, like, you could imagine four kids coming to your house. Like, it could get a little hectic, but just, like, the way that you guys view things is just laid back, right? Like, you don't let kids being kids stress you out. Like, they're just kids being kids.
Oh, yeah.
So
for
it's,
sure,
it's been great, man. I love kicking it at your place. You got a great house. We love Lindsay. She's amazing. And you know, your kids are super cool too. So we're just always excited to come down and visit you guys.
Thank you, man.
Thanks for always having us, man.
Yeah, dude, the feeling is very mutual. I'm really glad that we got a chance to get closer and kick it all the time. And and thanks to the MDS chapters for like kind of facilitating like us getting closer and stuff. So it's definitely
yes.
like working, you know, to bring the local communities closer together. So
yeah. Yeah, and I drive 6 hours down there. You know, that's the closest chapter for me, and I'm happy to do it. You know, like it's well worth it. I definitely never regret making that drive. So I'm looking forward to the next event.
Hell yeah, dude. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, John, thanks for coming on, man. It's been great to share your story a little bit, you know, hear about the struggles that you faced and how you've overcome them, which I really think if we summed it up, it's mindset, right? Like it's mindset. It's just, you keep going, you don't give up. You change the way that you view these tough scenarios that you're encountering, because no matter what you know, you're going to face them, right? Like yep. You can know all the hacks in the world. You can chat GPT your way, you know, through it, but like you still have to have that view of, you know, I'm going to get through this. This is a lesson. I'm making myself better by going through this and not giving up. And I think that's what you do really well also, is you just keep going.
Hell yeah, man. I appreciate the kind words. Yeah, that's really, I think, the way to sum it up. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, is there any way, you know, if anyone was interested in your online brand growth services or anything like that, or they just wanted to chat a little more about some things you spoke about, why don't you let the listeners know where they can find you?
Just find me on Facebook, holler at me, send me a message. In a vast majority of cases, if you're in MDS, you know, I'm just going to help you and give you any advice that I have in my head. If there's a good fit, we feel like we could add value, happy to do some services if it makes sense. But yeah, just holler at me, shoot me a message.
All right. Thanks, John.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. I appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
Are you a million-dollar seller looking to network with like-minded entrepreneurs? Apply for membership now at milliondollarsellers.com. Leave us a review and subscribe now so you don't miss out on next week's episode.